Okay, good morning. It is my privilege and honor to introduce our speaker, Leslie Hyatt. She is a local mom of three and the Assistant Director of Children's Ministries at Canyon Springs Church and also an occupational therapist at Poway Unified School District. Leslie.
Good morning, guys. I'm so excited to be here. Hold on, let me pull this up really quick. Should have done this. So, yes, I have been married to my husband for 10 years. Just tell you a little bit about myself. And I have three kids. I have a 2-year-old, an almost 4-year-old, and a 6-year-old. Let's see if this goes on. So, anyway, my kids are all very different. My 6-year-old is a totally typical firstborn. Here's my family. Maybe. Yay, okay. My 6-year-old is like total firstborn, people pleaser, always following directions. She's the first one to be helpful, like total typical firstborn. My middle child is like, how badly can I get injured, and is always carrying around a stick or a hammer. It's like knives, whatever he can find, he's carrying it around. And people come up to me all the time and they're like, should he be playing with those pliers? I'm like, yeah, he's fine. Don't worry about it. So he is always getting into trouble. And then our youngest, Beckett, he's 2. And he likes to just like get in the mess with his two big siblings. But he's very quick to play the victim card so that if something happens, he's like, I'm the baby, help me. And he throws himself on the ground in tantrum. So our dynamics are quite interesting. I also just want to mention this. Lincoln, our middle son, has kind of just been a little bit delayed his whole life. And I only bring this up because as we're talking about play, it kind of impacts the way that we play with him. So when he was about 2, when he was younger, we noticed that he was like kind of slow to do a lot of his gross motor skills. We signed him up for PT, being an occupational therapist and really into early intervention. I was like all over that. So he worked through San Diego Regional Center and he got physical therapy for a little bit. Then he got discharged. But he still continues to receive speech therapy twice a week. And so he now has an IEP through the school district and he has access to all of that. Only to say is that each of our kids are so different and so unique, and it really kind of does impact our play. So, yes, I wear many hats. I am an occupational therapist, and I also am the assistant children's director at our church. So, the great thing about being the assistant children's director is that everything I do is directly pouring back into my kids' lives. And there's not very many jobs that you have that you work outside of the home that literally every single thing that you're investing in is going back into your kids. So I love that. But I'm also an occupational therapist. And no, I don't help people get jobs. But some people don't know what occupational therapy is. It's basically a rehab and health profession, and we help people engage in all of their activities of daily living. So this looks really different. So for a kid, for when I go into a hospital setting, for example, if somebody has had a stroke or a heart attack, you're making sure that they're able to do all of those things that they need to engage in every day for their activities. So do they have the endurance to stand long enough to cook? Can they get on and off the toilet independently? Can they do all their grooming tasks? But an occupational therapist in the pediatric world, which is my passion, is so different. So basically, for kids, their occupation is to play. And a lot of what we do with kids is all of their daily routines and activities. So their grooming tasks, they're brushing their teeth, are they independent in dressing, in all their self-care tasks. But the hugest one is a child's occupation is to play. So, I have worked both in the outpatient pediatric clinic setting, and there we work a lot on all those self-care routines, brushing your teeth, all of that stuff. And then I have also worked in the school setting, which is what I'm doing right now 2 days a week. And in both settings, they're very unique, but I use play to promote all of the appropriate motor skills, to use imagination, to enhance their cognitive and both their fine motor as well as their visual motor skills. And so when Dana had asked about coming to talk about play, I was like, yes, this is my jam. I love play. So that's just a little bit about what I do. So yes, your child's occupation is to play, and it's going to promote the motor skills, stimulate your imagination. It really enhances social skills, and it also helps to improve intellect. So that's a little brief blurb about me and my kids and my kids' play preferences. But what I would really like right now, because this is going to help us as we talk about play this morning, is to take 5 minutes and be really specific about your kids' play preferences. And if you have multiple kids, then you can write a little bit about each of them. But think about your kids. Do they like Legos, trains, Moana, dinosaurs, cars? Given the option and free range of the house, what would they do? Lincoln would play with sticks and hammers. Your kids might be different. Do they like tactile play, like Play-Doh, Silly Putty? Do they prefer like loud physical play, or would they rather like go to their room and be by themselves and more of solitary play? And then if they have that preference, would they be like, let's have a play date, or would they kind of want to play by themselves or quietly? So just a few minutes to write that down, because it's going to help us this morning. Okay, so if you guys think of anything else as we're talking this morning, then write them down, because I really feel like as you're thinking about your child's specific play preferences, it's going to help you to be able to better play with them throughout the next week and month and year. So let's talk a little bit about what play is. Play is pleasurable, meaning that if the child is not enjoying the activity or having fun, if it's something that's driven by us and they are not enjoying it, then it's probably not considered play. It's also intrinsically motivated, meaning there's no extrinsic factors that's like kind of encouraging them. There's no other goal outside of it. It's just all intrinsically motivated. It's what they're drawn to. It's also process-oriented. We don't care about the ends. It's so much more about the means of play. It's freely chosen. It's spontaneous and it's voluntary. If they don't think that it is chosen by them, then they're a lot less likely to have fun and they're a lot less likely to engage in that play. And it's also actively engaged. So when I tell my kids that I'm playing school with them while I'm simultaneously cooking dinner and checking Facebook, I'm not really playing with them. Hashtag busted. And then the other thing is play is non-literal. So a lot of times it involves that make-believe play. So just geek out with me for a second. I want to just tell you a little bit about this system that was created by Stanley Greenspan. And the idea of it is that it's created for therapists, but it gives us like a real framework for how to play with kids. And the reason that it does that is that it kind of shows you that if you engage in play in this particular way, it really enhances development. And so the main idea of floor time is that you engage with your children in three specific ways. So the first thing is you always follow the child's lead. So that means that if the child is sitting on the ground playing with dinosaurs, you don't kind of like bust in with a brand new whole play idea. So you kind of just jump into where they are and engage right at the moment that they are. If they're in a super excitable state, then you need to be really excited. And if they're like much more calm, then you kind of try to jump into that emotional state also. So whatever their emotional flow is kind of where you're supposed to start to engage. You also want to challenge the child to be spontaneous. So this is, again, was created. It was designed for children that have any kind of developmental delay, but the research shows that it will enhance all of typical development. And so the idea is that for a child that might have difficulty with play ideas, and if they have a bunch of trains, they just line them up in a straight row instead of, you know, following the trains around and stopping at a stoplight. When you're engaging this specific type of play with them, you're going to challenge them to be spontaneous, which is going to help them to grow. And you're going to kind of encourage them to move beyond their typical play sequences. And then the last thing that I was kind of talking about, expanding the action and interaction to include all of their motor skills. So it's not just like sitting in one spot, but it might be the trains are jumping over or they're going on a bumpy surface. So it's all of the like motor skills and sensory skills that are kind of incorporated into that also. So the main purpose of floor time is to excite the child's interest, draw them to connect to you, and then challenge them to be creative, curious, and spontaneous. All of these help to grow and develop your child intellectually and emotionally. I mean, are you kidding me? This is like not made for therapists. This is like made for parents. Every parent wants their child to draw close to them, be interested in them, connect with them, and then to grow intellectually and emotionally. So I just think this is so exciting and so great for moms to hear also. I want to tell you, I wanted to also mention about floor time. Floor time is totally an evidence-based practice. In 2011, they did two randomized control studies, and they found that floor time, so getting on your child and intentionally playing in those three specific ways with your child, was more effective than six different kinds of behavioral intervention. So if you think about from like, I go to a lot because I have a lot of kids on my caseload like this, but a child that has autism, they might need to receive a lot of behavioral intervention. And these are like really intense applied behavioral analysis. They might get like 6 or 8 hours of treatment where a therapist is coming into their home and they're kind of changing an old behavior and replacing with a new functional behavior. So they might be a kid that doesn't know how to play. And so they're teaching them over and over and over for 6 to 8 hours a week. Some of these kids, some kids get even more than that. So that is that behavioral analysis type approaches that they related this to, and they are saying that doing floor time play with your kids is more effective than six of those intensive 6 to 8 hour programs. So I just think that's fascinating. I want to tell you a little bit about Brinley. So Brinley, I mean, this is not really her, but how cute is that little girl? She was, that would be like major HIPAA. So Brinley was like the sweetest little redheaded blue-eyed girl, and anybody that saw her just wanted to go and embrace her. She was just such a little love. She had a diagnosis of autism, and when she came to me, she had already been evaluated, and so she came to me with goals. She came to me with goals in the areas of like zippers and buttons and eating with a spoon. But Brinley had just turned 3, and she had no words. She occasionally would sign more, or she would occasionally sign all done, but they weren't really consistent. And so after the second week of treatment, I was like, oh, and she did a lot of grunting. So if I, like, kind of presented her with a play idea, she would, like, turn her back and be like, ugh! Like, she didn't know how to play. The little girl was so sweet, but she didn't know what to do. She was just like dropped in this world and had no idea how to play. So after the second week of treatment, I was thinking, gosh, how am I going to get this girl to zipper? She doesn't even want to like turn around and look at me. I give her like, you know, some balls to play with. She has no idea. Well, one day, I don't know how, I discovered that Brinley like really liked balloons. And so I would blow up a balloon and let it go, and it would go all the way around, and she would run over, and she would giggle. And this was like the start of floor time. She was starting to be, you know, that shared attention and the regulation. She was able to, like, stop and actually look at me. And so we continued this balloon play for much longer than I desired. Like, every kind of balloon you could think of. Every kind of size of the balloon. I would hide the balloons in like sensory beans and rice, you know, and she would have to dig through and find the balloons. And I mean, her whole world was balloons. She loved it. But what was amazing is that I would start to get more of this shared interaction and this regulation. And so before that, she didn't want anything to do with me, and I was like off-putting, and she just didn't even know how to play, and the gym seemed so big. I mean, it's like a kid's dream. There's like zip lines, and she just wanted to stand in a corner. She didn't know what to do. So before long, I would like blow the balloon up. She would run across the room. She would get it. She would bring it back, and she would giggle with me, and she would sign more, and she started to be so engaged. So then I was like, okay, well, I'm going to blow up a balloon. I put a jacket on her, and I'm like, zip it up, and she's like, oh, like crying. I'm like, first zip up your jacket, and then we're going to do the balloons. And she was like, okay, I'll do anything for that balloon. So she was trying. Well, this sweet little girl made so much progress. And it was not because anything like of me specifically, but this was like her one play idea. This was her one thing that she was engaged in, the one thing that she loved. And I took that one play idea and I just helped her to, one, get that shared attention and regulation. I got that engagement and that relatability to her. And then we started to use some of this problem solving to help her figure out like how she can use something that she really liked to enhance her development. So Brinley went on. She made so much progress. She says like 3 to 5 words at a time now. She has requests. She can ask for things. I sadly don't see her anymore, but she would run up to people and give them hugs. There was so much that she developed just from figuring out that she really liked a balloon, which is where I just really want to continue to challenge you guys to think of your kids' specific play preferences, because I might really love to pop Brinley in the ball pit and play with her that way, or I might really love to get her on a swing and push her slow and high, but she just wanted to play with the balloon. So my play preferences should not impact what she wants, and that's not how she's going to continue to develop and grow. So a little bit about research here. I know everybody loves research. So research is now showing that play is a necessity in children's lives. There was a bunch of studies that were done, and it says that as children play, they're developing cognitive, emotional, social, and physical skills, and it even promotes proper brain development. I know that sometimes play seems daunting and overwhelming, but can I give you a little freedom? No Spanish immersion classes, no gymnastics, no swim lessons, no music classes, no tennis lessons, piano lessons. You can play with your kids. It's amazing. I mean, you literally can just sit and play with your kids for 5 or 10 minutes a day, and you're going to give them all of the cognitive, emotional, social, and physical skills that they need to be successful, research shows, for the kindergarten classroom and throughout the workplace. So I just, I love that. Research shows that it promotes growth, development, creativity, problem solving, confidence, and that positive social emotional development. So I hope you guys find a little freedom in that. Okay, I want to talk for a second about play and managing emotions. I'm sure having kids in preschool, nobody's kids ever have tantrums, right? Only like 4 on the way here. But I think this is really awesome that play really does help manage emotions. So every day our kids are inundated with all of these emotions and feelings they have. So, you know, they have fear. What if there really is something under the bed? And they have jealousy. I think mommy likes my brother better than me. And they have humiliation. The teacher acted like I should know the answer and all the other kids laughed. And they have panic. What if I don't make it to the bathroom on time? And they have anger and disappointment. And there's research that shows that laughter actually transforms our body chemistry, and that it helps us to be able to release all of those pent-up emotions and instead of a tantrum. So all of those emotions that kids are experiencing every single day, like sweating and laughter and all of those things, can actually help decrease that emotional state and then get them to a more regulated state. So instead of having a tantrum, they're able to laugh and get that same energy out. So I just want you to think about your kids and that, and the next time that they are having a tantrum and they're trying to get out some of those, I mean, those really are our child's best ways to communicate with us that they are feeling overwhelmed with the emotions that they're experiencing. So laughter and energy and physical activity, all of those things really help to manage those emotions. All right, so I'm going to talk about my kids again. So I think this was like late in summer sometime, and Lincoln is running through the house with sticks, big surprise. And I'm thinking in my head, oh my gosh, those like slivers are getting all over the house. It's so messy. And he's going to totally hit Beckett on the top of the head. And I'm like, oh, why are you doing this? And my daughter walks up in her most entitled voice ever. And she's like, I want to go fishing. I'm like, what? Okay, well, we don't have fishing poles. And she's like, well, let's just buy some. I'm like, okay, great. We're not going to buy fishing poles, honey. It's not like a hobby that we do regularly, so we're not going to go buy them. And I said, plus, Daddy's working, and I don't want to be sticking worms on the end of fishing poles. And she's like, oh, no, you can use a hot dog. Mason used a hot dog at the end of his fishing pole, and he got 3 fish. I'm like, what? Who is this child? Gosh, she's got an answer for everything. So lastly, I was like, oh, I got one more thing. I'm like, well, if we're going to be out, like, by the lake, you know, I have 2 boys that don't know how to swim. We're not going to go to the lake and have 2 kids that don't know how to swim and be near this big body of water. She's like, oh, you can put their floaties on them. Just put their floaties on them. If they fall in, then their floaties will help them. I'm like, oh, my gosh, is it school time yet? So I was like, all right, well, she's not going to let this go. So I called to Lincoln. I said, hey, Lincoln, go grab three of the biggest sticks you can find in the yard. So he runs out and he gets his three. He's so proud. There's a purpose for his sticks. He gets his three sticks. I get a string. I tie a clothespin on the end of it. I throw them all into Beckett's crib. There they are. I don't know why they're all naked, by the way. Some of these photos I realized I'm putting into the PowerPoint, I was like, oh, that's. I wasn't really intending to use them in a presentation. So anyway, so they jump into his crib. I threw a blanket over the top so they wouldn't be able to see out. And I told them, this is your boat. Are you guys ready to go fishing? So they threw their fishing pole over, and I'm not kidding. I was literally like, find a sticker on the ground. I'm like, oop, you get a sticker. And I found like a piece of dirt. Oh, great, you get it. Putting anything on the end of this fishing pole, and they were loving it. They thought it was the greatest thing ever. They were laughing, and they were like, I'm going to catch something bigger. No, I'm going to catch something bigger. They thought it was the greatest thing ever. Here's another thing that's amazing. After about 15 minutes, anybody else get tired of playing with their kids after 15 minutes? I was tapped out. I was like, all right. Good fishing sesh, and I left, and they continued to play this game. Okay, the reason why this game was so effective was not because I went on Etsy, and I was a super crafty mom, and I went and spent all this money to, like, get this great craft that we were going to play together. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but the reason why the kids love this so much was that Peyton was dying to go fishing, and Lincoln loved playing with sticks. And Beckett's like, I just got to do what my two older siblings do. So, So after I left, they continued to play this. Like Peyton would be the person on the outside, and the two boys would throw it out, and she would clip it on, and they just laughed and giggled, and they thought it was the greatest thing ever. So that's one way that I was like, you know, I often think, pretend you're like me, I often think that when I'm at home, I'm like, gosh, I know that I should really go play with my kids. I mean, I play all day with other people's kids, and I'm like, this is so good. You're getting so smart right now. And then when I'm with my kids, I'm like, gosh, the laundry needs to be done, and there's dishes over there. And so in the back of my head, I know that I really should be playing with my kids, but there's all these other things that are lingering, right? I mean, anybody else? And I'm like, oh, and it would be so nice to just, like, check Instagram right now or whatever. So I feel like that's going to always be a struggle for us because there's so many things that we need to do, but this brought me like so much pleasure. And when you actually like engage and can connect with your child and have this moment when they like are like, you heard me, you heard what I wanted to do, and you made it so fun and you challenged us. Like my kids wouldn't have been able to think like, hey, let's tie a string at the end of a stick and use it to catch fish. Like they wouldn't have been able to come up with that play idea, but that's like the way they were going. And so it was so fun and pleasurable for them. And so of course that was so fun for me too. So we can also use play to, this one's not my child, the crying one. We can also use play to manage behaviors. So I just have a few ideas. These are not all of the behaviors that you might have. But these are some ones that I came up with that kind of occur a lot. And then I also got some ideas from Playful Parenting by Lawrence Cohen of how we can use play to combat some of these behaviors. So when your child's super clingy or has been experiencing a lot of separation anxiety recently, you can play this idea of like, I know you want me to play, but I need you, and holding on to their hands, and they're trying to go into the other room and like, I need you, stay with me. And kind of like flip the roles on them. And then as they start to leave, like, no, come back, I need you. And then finally when they're like, no, I need to go, I'm going to get my American Girl doll, you're like, okay, I'll be fine. I know it'll be okay. But when you kind of like flip the tables on your kids like that, then they feel like the one that's like, that's right, I'm leaving you. And suddenly they think like, oh, I guess... I'm going to come back to them, so certainly they're going to come back to me. So that's a good one for that clingy type thing. For power struggles, oh lordy, we got these in our house. I liked all these games where your kid gets to be the powerful one. So like I pretend I'm a big monster, and then we were just doing this the other day, actually. There was like this big beanbag at like our church children's area, and I was like walking through, and then I'd be like, blow, and my boys would be like, whew, and I would fly backwards onto the thing, and they were laughing, and then I just, oh my gosh, you're so strong, and giving them the sense of being like the powerful one, or using like a pillow, they hit you with a pillow, and you fall to the ground, even something like a feather, they use the feather, and then they feel like they have the power over you, they kind of get this feeling of like, oh, I am powerful. And then it kind of helps them feel like, I am strong. I am a strong person. Even though it's play and it seems so silly, you're like, this isn't even real life. Like, you're not going to really go and push somebody, I hope. Well, my kids might. But it gives them that sense of being strong. And then it hopefully kind of eliminates some of those power struggles. If your child is grumpy, I like to do this. I tell them, you seem like you're in a total no mood. So every time I say yes, I want you to say no in the same way I do. So if I say yes in a really high voice, I want you to say no in a really high voice. And if I say yes, I want you to say no. And so anyway, it kind of like for kids, you know, it's all it takes is a little snap back to reality. And they think it's funny and they get some of that laughter out. And then suddenly all those built up pent up emotions kind of like get them back to baseline. When you go through a phase of only wanting mommy, I like to like have my husband like sit in between us on the couch. So it's like a child and my husband and then me, and then play this game of like, I bet you can't get to mommy. And as they try to get to mommy, you pull them back and say, nope, can't get her. I'm going to get to mommy. Nope, you can't get her. And again, it's like, then you finally get there, and then you're like, oh, you got her, and then you can flip them, and then the child sits in the middle, and then the husband's over here, I bet you can't get to mommy, but again, it kind of just like, it's another way to play, and they're playing out that idea in their head, like they have this idea in their head that whether it's rational or not, that you're never going to come back, or that you're way more powerful, and they have no say in life, or that they're just grumpy, and they don't know how to kick it, so these are just some of those play ideas. When your siblings are fighting, this is hilarious. I mean, toddlers might not work so much, but if you have one kid that's like a little bit older, you could say like, hey, I want you guys to go fight, and then do whatever you're doing, get, you know, back to your thing, and then as they're standing on wherever or fighting back and forth, you pretend to be like a TV commentator. Oh no, we have the super bossy sister. What is going to happen? Do they realize that there's more salami in the fridge, or will they continue to fight over it? And again, it's so silly, but the kids like laugh and they think it's so funny, and then before you know it, they're like, oh wait, I'm gonna be the commentator now, and you pretend fight with whoever, and then they just think it's funny and it's silly, and it kind of gets them out of that mood. The last one is whining. When your kids are whining, everybody have their pens out? No, I'm just kidding. I don't have all the answers, but I think that whining is a lot of times really happens because our kids are feeling like powerless. And so if we just keep saying like, I'm not going to listen until you have your big voice on, or I'm not hearing you, I need you to get your voice on, that's not really helping them to figure out like how to do it. And it only helps them to feel like more weak and you're more strong, like, all right, figure it out type of thing. But I also don't want them to think like I'm going to always respond to them when they're whining. Like, they really do need to like use a normal voice. So I use this for everything, but I think you lost your big boy voice. Let's go try to find it. Is it in the toy box? No. Is it under the couch? No. Where's your big boy voice? And suddenly they're like, Mom. And then, oh my gosh, you found it. There's your big boy voice. I love your strong voice. Now, what was it that you needed to tell me? And if you can just like get them into a tiny bit of play, I feel like sometimes they're suddenly like, oh, okay, I can talk to you in a normal voice now. So those are not all your problem fixers, but I do really think that we can use play a lot to manage some of those problem behaviors. All right, so play and relationship building. So from the time babies are born, they're super social. You know, a baby, like, they first start to look at you, and then they smile, and then they coo, and then they want you to talk back to them. So all of that relationship building is really how your child feels safe and attached, and that's how they have confidence to engage in the rest of the world. So when we give children back what they're asking for, so when they're like smiling or cooing, I mean, can you imagine if like your child smiled at you and then you just was like so sad? That's like how they learn about the world. And of course, when it's a little baby, it's their first smile. You can't wait to smile back at them. And so what your child is getting back when you're playing with them, it gives them super important information about the world, about how to think, about how to act, how to communicate, and how to show emotions to continue to develop those social skills. So spending time with your child and playing is really sending this simple message of, you are important to me. And I love that because I know we're all moms and all of us would like die. I feel like I'm going to get emotional. But all of us would like die to let our kids know, like, you are so important to me. You mean so much to me. And really, playing is like the number one way that we can tell our kids, like, you are important to me. The dishes can wait. The laundry can wait. I can spend 5 minutes to play with you. You are really important. So I love that. That's really what relationships are all about. I had this awesome, I guess this didn't upload my most recent one, but I had this awesome video of my son playing peekaboo. But I feel like peekaboo is the best example of how, like, relationships are built, because kids start to play peekaboo at, I don't know, like 6, 9 months, and then it continues all the way through until they're, like, I don't know, old, I feel like. But the other day, this was another video that I was going to be like, this was not intended to be on a presentation. I don't know why I didn't transfer, but anyway. It was this video of me, and I'm, like, hiding behind the closet, and there's, like, a hallway out to our room, and every time my 2-year-old runs in, I pop out, I'm like, blah, and he gets so scared, he's like, ah, and he runs out of the room, and then my husband is, like, filming, and he says, like, where'd mommy go? And he's standing in the hallway, and he's like, where's mommy? And in this moment of peekaboo, our kids are learning so much. They're learning, like, social interaction, so, like, you talk to me and I talk to you. They're, like, growing closer to us. They're coming back to you for play. They're saying, like, I want to do that play sequence again, even for the 400th time when you're like, great, we played peekaboo for 4,000 minutes. Can we please be over done? But they're learning that. They're learning that, like, social interaction. They're learning, like, my turn, your turn. And then they're learning problem-solving skills. So, like, even at that young age of 6 and 9 months, and they go away, they're thinking, is mommy going to come back? And that's, like, starting to trigger all of that cognitive of, like, where is mommy? Let me think about, you know, I mean, obviously they don't think in that same way at 6 months, but I just think that even a simple game like peekaboo, we are teaching our child, like, so much about how to engage and interact. So, and it's really healthy. So we're giving them, like, the language and motor skills, especially, like, even a baby at, like, 6 months, when you start to play peekaboo, they start to reach for you and all that. So they're really learning those early motor skills. And then we're giving them the confidence to continue to explore. Okay, so really quick, I want to take a quick break, and you can talk, write it down or talk with each other about what things inhibit you from playing with your kids. Is it your to-do list, distractions, a difference in play preferences? So, like I was talking about earlier, you might not love playing with sticks as much as Lincoln does. A general dislike for play. Just talk about, you know, what are those things that inhibit you from playing with your kids? Or maybe it's all of the above.
Thank you.
Okay. I know, you could probably talk forever on all the ways that you don't want to play with your children. And was there any one, like, main theme at your table? Anybody? A main theme? Yes? Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. I'm all about visuals and timers. This is, again, something that, like, is really great because I use a lot of tools from kids that have, like, delays or in, like, emotional or cognitive development, but they work amazing for our kids that are typically developing, too. So, like, all the visuals that you can have in the world are always helpful for your kids. So if your kid has a hard time with that transition away, then setting a timer. So saying, like, all right, we have 2 more minutes to play, and then remember we have to get in the car to do whatever. Or then mommy needs to go switch over a load of laundry, or whatever it is. Timers can be really effective. Like any sort of visual, like if you can draw a picture of, like, what's going to happen next, I'm all about the visual cues as much as you can. And then anytime anywhere with transitions in general, I feel like, as a rule of thumb, the more front-loading is what we call it in the therapy world that you can do as possible is, like, great. And some kids are fine with transition and some kids have a harder time. So you as moms know that way better than anybody. If your kid tends to be one of those kids that has a lot of difficulty with transition, then saying, like, all right, we have 5 more minutes, and then giving them another warning. We have 2 more minutes. Okay, it's just 1 more minute, and then mommy needs all of that reminding, so hopefully helps with some of that transition away from. But the other thing I, like, might challenge is if your child feels like they're only getting that play every once in a while, that, like, really, like, sit down face-to-face intentional play, then chances are they're going to, like, cling tighter to you in those moments. And so the more often you do that play, it's same thing with, like, separation, I feel like. The first, like, 4 times you drop your kids off in the nursery, they're going to be, like, screaming like crazy. But, you know, after the, like, 6th, 7th, 8th time, when they see that you're coming back, then that it becomes a little bit easier. So I just might challenge that a little bit, too. Like, the more frequently that you play, then maybe hopefully the easier to transition away from it. Anybody else have any big themes of no play with your kids? Housework. I know that is like totally my killer because I work 4 days a week, and when I come home and there's, like, such a short window, I feel like I instantly go to, like, oh my gosh, the idea of, like, getting down on the ground and getting messy with, like, stickers and Play-Doh seems, like, overwhelming when I still have mess from morning out. So that's, like, a real thing. We're going to talk about that a tiny bit more at the end, but I agree with that one for sure. Okay, I just want to go through some of these play by age to give you guys an idea of what kids, babies, all the way through preschoolers are really drawn to by age. So babies are all about, like, their sensory system. So everything that they can see and hear, they're starting to do a little bit of that, like, cause and effect, like with a rattle, like, or, you know, they always ask you at a pediatrician visit, like, is your child reaching for stuff yet? When they're first starting to hit something, and then they see that there's a reaction to that. So when you're playing with your babies, anytime that you are talking with them, changing your voice inflection, or anytime that you're showing them stuff, then you're really tapping into their play, and you're showing them that they're important and that you are engaged with them. For crawlers, it starts to be that peekaboo that we kind of talked about, and then all of the touch, which is, like, everything in your mouth, and you're like, you're going to kill yourself by the time you're a year old because you're putting marbles in your mouth. But that's really how they're learning. So anytime you can, like, create an environment where you're really getting all of those tools for them to touch and play, then those are the ways that they feel like they're really getting a chance to challenge and to challenge them and to play, and that you're engaged with them. And then our toddlers are really starting to practice more of those gross and fine motor skills. So here you can start to incorporate some other things that are going to help some of their other development and not just their emotional, social, and kind of language. So, you know, setting up obstacle courses or doing, like, small motor play activities, puzzles, all of those things. Toddlers are really starting to get into that. And they're also exploring that, like, language. So they're starting to talk a lot more, you know, 1 to 3 words, and then you're talking back to them. And then they're doing that side by side outside play with peers. So even though they're not like actively engaging with peers, a typically developing child at like the toddler age might see that yesterday Tommy was playing a certain way with the trains, and then tomorrow they practice it. Or after Tommy leaves, then they go over there and they practice that same play idea. So even though they're not like, Tommy, what are you doing? You want to play trains? They really are observing. So all of that side by side play is really important at the toddler age. And then preschoolers, they're really starting to take pleasure in other children, which is like fun. And then you're like, go play with your friends so I can watch you and not have to play. But what is true is that at that preschool age, if you kind of like show a play idea, then the, you know, one or two or three other kids might kind of try to copy that idea and try to do the same thing with their friends, which is comes to be a fun age. They're learning to share, and then they're starting to do that imaginative and pretend play. Our preschool teacher is always asking us to send in more Halloween costumes. Don't throw away your Halloween costumes. Send them in. Kids just, like, love to dress up in everything. And so the other day, my son was a ballerina, you know. But, yes, all of that imaginative and pretend play. So I have a bunch of ideas up here, and these, if you flip over to the back of your handout, they're all on here so that nobody has to frantically write. But I just want to go through some of these different kind of play, I guess, areas that we look at that I think are really important. So some of the pretend play ideas like school and superhero, again, I might have like 15 things here, but your kid might only be drawn to like one or two. We use like random props. I swear our kids don't play with toys. Is that just me? Our kids like play with the Amazon boxes and the like laundry basket. The amount of time we have a plastic like workshop, you know, bench that is like for kids to, you know, use like a hammer and a nail, whatever. The only purpose of that in our house is to push over into the kitchen and stand on top of to see what food they can get out of the cabinet. I swear they don't even use it to ever play for its actual purpose. But they're growing some gross motor skills there. So anyway, my point of telling you that is that to play with your kids, you really don't need to necessarily go buy things. I mean, if your kid is really, really, really drawn to something specific, and if your kid maybe plays with toys, unlike mine, then of course there's going to be things that you want to like incorporate into your toy library. But there's so many of these things that can just be done out of, you know, random stuff that you find in your house. Library play, you have books, like set books into a corner and say, like, I'm the librarian, which books do you want to come check out? And then they come over and they pick out which books they want and you pretend to scan it. So there's a lot of these things that you don't actually need the real things. Grocery store play, are you kidding me? We could just put out like a bunch of pieces of fruit on top of the counter, and then if you have a shopping cart or anything else in your house, your kid can, or bag, my kids throw stuff in the bags all the time, carry their bag around, pick out which things that they want and tell them, you owe me $45. And they're like, okay. And they think it's so great. But all this pretend play is like how they're figuring out how to navigate the world. We throw our kids in the car for everything. We're like, oh, we're going to the library now. Oh, time for the doctor's office. Oh, we got to go get this from Trader Joe's. And this is how they're like figuring it out. And then they replay those play sequences, and it's how they're continuing to grow and develop. So anytime you can incorporate pretend play, these are just some additional ideas in case you haven't thought of or need some more. Sensory motor play. I love sensory motor play. I work with a lot of kids with autism, like I mentioned, and a lot of them are really tactile defensive, so they have a really hard time touching and playing with new textures. And so I love to incorporate sensory motor play into everything. As your kids get like into the later preschool age and then early elementary, a lot of times they're learning how to draw and color and write their letters. And so all of these sensory motor play ideas can be incorporated into continuing to develop those fine motor activities too, which is awesome. So I love sensory bins, and this doesn't have to be, again, something that you buy, but if you just have like a big Tupperware container in your house and you fill it with dried beans or Easter grass or cooked spaghetti or corn kernels or sand or pom-poms or seashells, anything that you have, dirt, I love to have like a bin and then hide stuff in it. Like if you're like, oh gosh, my kid is not good at puzzles. Let's work on puzzles. Hide all those things in a sensory bin and oh my gosh, suddenly they'll sit and do puzzles with you. They'll dig through the sensory bin, find a puzzle piece, put it into the puzzle. And suddenly they think it's like the best thing ever when all you did is add a little like sensory component to it. So I love sensory bins. In summer you can freeze little plastic dinosaurs or marbles or balls or anything in the ice cube trays, and then they have to rub the ice cube trays to get the little toys out. So that's a really fun one. And then you can put paint or gel inside of a Ziploc bag and paint on it, sand art, salt painting, finger paint. All these things are just incorporating a multi-sensory, so it's not just using their eyes, but it's also using their hands. And a lot of us are kinesthetic learners, so it's really great to tap into that for our kids' development also. So I love sensory play. Roughhouse play, I despise. I have such a hard time with this, and that's all my boys want to do. And so if your kids really love roughhouse play, see if you can get somebody else to do it with them. No, I just I hear it happening in the other room, and it's their biggest belly laughs of all time. Like, I never hear my kids laugh as loud. Literally last night, I was filming them on my phone for 3 minutes, and they were whacking each other over the head with the pillows and shoving each other into the couches and all of this stuff. And I'm like, oh my gosh, somebody's going to get hurt so bad. But they were laughing so hard. They love all this roughhouse play. I just get so nervous that somebody's going to get hurt. And I know that it always ends in crying, but it really is so good for development. So we have to give them some safe ways to do it, because it really is so good. And this, I feel like, is one of the best ways. When I see my kid getting to that pending dysregulation, they're starting to become out of control, they're about to have an emotional tantrum. If I can get them into some of this roughhouse play, I can stop them from going over that ledge. So it really is critical. But if you hate it, you're not alone. Airplane, laying on your back and having your kids up, London Bridge, the mop, we on hardwood floors. Put our kids on their backs. My husband's really good at this, and he spreads his legs wide, and he twirls them around in circles, and they think it's, hysterical, or drag them by their ankles and tell them that they're cleaning the floors. Obstacle courses are amazing. We set these up in our backyard or in our house. This is, another one that you can do if it's, a rainy day, and you're like, what am I going to do? You can set up an obstacle course, take the couch cushions off of your couch and have them jump from one couch cushion to the other, and then have them crawl under chairs or under a table. It's messy, I know, but it's a really great activity for them and they love it. Tickling is always a win. Grab and go, this is a really fun activity. If you and your kids are facing each other and you're all on all fours, you try to reach around and take their socks off while they're also trying to reach around and take your socks off. And it's just basically all over the ground and you're chasing each other. But the kids think it's hilarious. They're laughing so hard. So that's a really fun one. Cooperative play is anything working on a puzzle together or stringing beads together, building towers, playing simple board games, memory, chalk outside, partner yoga. My kids don't like yoga, but there's literally some friends from our preschool class that will come home and lay a towel out and do yoga together. They must do in class, and it's pretty awesome to watch. Okay, I have to warn you, this next slide looks a little disturbing. Again, it's another one that I didn't really intend to ever post in a presentation, and my sister was like, what is that photo? But, okay, so this is, yes, I know, it's not strangle the baby game, but one day, my son was, okay, those long spools of curling ribbon? He had gotten it, I don't even know where he found it, gotten it off the roll, and it was all around our entire house. I mean, it was up and over, it was everywhere, and I was like, oh my gosh, why don't you just sit in the room and play nicely with your toys? But he had taken this everywhere, and I said, what are you doing with that? And he's like, I'm gonna make a rope. And I was like, okay. So then Peyton walked through and she had this baby doll and she was, whatever. Before long, we came up with this great idea for, I don't know if you can see it here. This is a zip line for the baby, okay? That is a zip line. And we had to jerry-rig everything because they were like, well, Peyton's like, I don't know how we tied this is like a hair tie, around the baby, and then it's like over one of those like bangle bracelets. There's nothing is safe in our house. But you just have to watch this because this is another moment of intention.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You see this one part right here where there's like an extra like tie, another piece of string that's tied on. We had the zip line going till there and they're like, no, let's make it go longer. So we're trying to make it go the whole length of the house. This is like totally another thing that I was like, oh my gosh, you're making such a mess. You're getting out all of this stuff and Peyton has all these babies out. But we like used it. And did you see those kids running down together and so happy? It's amazing. So yes, it was a disturbing picture. But my point was, is that they used that for cooperative play and we couldn't figure out how to get the baby to hang on there. And so then we were using problem solving and Peyton's like, oh, well, let's use this rubber band. But then it didn't slide because the rubber band was too tight. And so anyway, it's just another way to show you that you can use all the random stuff in your house. So far, I've shown you nothing of actual toys. As I told you, my kids don't play with toys. Constructive play, anything with building with blocks. We love to like set up a bunch of like containers or cups and then bowl with them. That's really fun. Building with popsicle sticks or a fort. Oh my gosh, forts are like so fun. Another thing, I know it makes your house messy and then you have to put it all away. Make a game, have them play cleaning up and then it won't hopefully be so bad when you have to clean it all up. So these are some of my like ideas that I have for play. And this is only to try to hopefully get you guys to spur on and think of the things that your kids are drawn to so that you can intentionally play with your kids. But I do have a challenge for you. And that is my hashtag 30 days of play. So I really think it would be amazing if we could commit to 5 minutes. There's 24 hours in a day. If you could commit to 5 minutes of intentionally playing with your kids every day. And I really want you to notice is if there's any improvement in behaviors or if your relationship grows with your child. I was just mentioning the other day that a lot of times when your kids get in those ruts where you're like, oh my gosh, every day is hard with you right now. Like every day there's a power struggle. Every day there's like an emotional outburst. Every day I feel like you're not listening to me. And if you can find a way to like reconnect with your child, then those start to diminish because they feel safe and they feel comfortable and they feel valued and important. And so I think sometimes as moms, we like go to like, what can we do that's really big to reconnect with our kids? I do the same thing. I'm like, oh, you want to go out for ice cream? That will certainly turn everything around. But I really truly believe when my kids have been going through super hard times and they're just like in that not great place, if I just like carve out 5 minutes and do what they want, we drag them to stuff all day long. And it's not our fault. We have to do life. But if we spend like 5 minutes, like, what are you doing? How can I jump in where you are and help promote that development? Then I really think it will make a difference in our kids. And I really think that we will draw closer to our kids in those moments too. So that's my challenge for you guys. And thank you so much for your time. It's been so amazing.
And by popular demand, I'd like to invite Leslie back to the stage for a little open Q&A from the room.
Yeah. All right. What you got for me?
Oh, thanks. So my question for you is related to the sensory play.
Yes.
How do you prevent your children from eating the sensory item?
Yes, so that's a great question. And it has to be, I mean, if you have a toddler that loves the sensory play, but then you have a little one that can't do it yet, then you'd have to do something like that during like a nap time that maybe your other one isn't napping. You can't really prevent it unless you're right there. And I mean, so a few things. Like one, if your child's at the cognitive age where you can say like, if you put that in your mouth and we'll have to be all done, then you can do that. And after like 3 warnings, then you're all done and you have to pick it up. The second thing I would say is if you know your child tends to mouth a lot of things, then make sure that the object is bigger so that they can't get it in their mouth. So maybe you're using like ping pong balls inside a bin or something like that. But if it's like, it's not necessarily, if you know your child's a mouther, it's not necessarily something that you can like sit them with and then be gone type of thing. And all those kids are different. But no, you can't really prevent it. chances are they're going to put it in their mouth, some of the kids. So I would just try to be creative in how you, like, give it to them, maybe. Yeah.
I liked what you said about laughter and how it kind of helps diffuse some of their emotions. And I know what you're talking about when you said that, but my kids laugh, like, when they get in trouble. So I'll be like, don't do that. That was horrible. And they'll just start laughing. And part of me is like, maybe if I can, like, are they diffusing their emotion in that moment? Usually I just get down on them and say, don't laugh. You're in trouble, you know? But they do that all the time. So are they just trying to kind of, they feel those emotions of being in trouble and they're trying to deal with it with laughter? Or do I need to, like, discipline them then for their laughter?
I wouldn't discipline for laughter because it's amazing. But I would say, I mean, each kid is so different. But if that type of discipline isn't working and they're laughing in response to it, then there might be some, like, direct teaching that needs to be taught in that moment. So, you know, when we're getting in trouble, it's important that you look at mommy and you don't giggle. If you're going to giggle, then we're going to need to take a break. And when your body feels ready, you can come back out. We talk about, like, how our body feels so much in our house and so much at my work. So if your body's feeling, like, really silly, then you might not be ready to talk. Same thing if my kids are tantruming. I'm not going to, like, try to have a conversation with them about what they did that's incorrect. So I will often, I don't know that this is always right, but I will often set them in their room and tell them that they can't come out until their body's ready. So anytime my kid's in timeout, they're like, I'm ready to talk. But I just, like, really trying to get them to understand, like, when somebody's talking to you and they're trying to have a serious conversation, it's not appropriate to laugh. And so that might need to be some direct teaching. But I definitely wouldn't, like, stop the laughter because I think laughter is, like, so good. But tell them, like, when mommy's trying to teach you something and tell you something, it's not okay to laugh. I would love for you to laugh when we're playing and give them specific examples. But, yeah, it could be a way that they're just really trying to, like, expel that energy. I would much prefer laughter over tantrum because I think that's harder in some ways. But I would try taking a break. I would try, like, okay, you're not ready to talk. You're giggling. Why don't you take a break, and then we'll come back when you're ready to talk. Might help.
Any suggestions for how to handle competitiveness between siblings in play? Because I feel like my six-year-old turns everything into a competition with his younger brother, and then it ends in someone crying.
Yeah, so I actually have had this in, like, a classroom setting. We teach, like, a group of kids, and the speech and language pathologist and myself do a group together. It might be a little bit tricky based on ages because they're obviously all similar in age, but we have, like, so much competitiveness in this class and so much, like, snarky remarks back and forth. And the best thing I can trip to say is, like, try to do something that is, like, a cooperative play. So, like, I don't know, I'm just off the cusp. But if you are doing, like, a marshmallow and toothpicks, and, like, one kid has the toothpicks and one kid has the marshmallows, and they have to, like, do it together to make it, and then at the end praise them, like, I love how you work together. Anytime there's, like, a problem behavior, try, like, your very best to catch them in those, like, positive moments of doing the expected behavior, is what I would really say. So anything that you can do of, like, cooperative play, if there's anything that they both like, that they have a commonality of, try to do that. And then as you enter into their play and see them, like, not being competitive, really praise that. The more we can catch them doing, like, the good things, then they're going to subconsciously be like, I want more of mommy's attention. I'm going to keep trying to play together. So, and I know ages are tricky with that too. Like, sometimes if kids are closer in age, then they tend to be more competitive. But I would try to really, like, set up, design cooperative play activities, and then praise for, like, playing together instead of being competitive. Hopefully.
Do you have any, I hear that you don't have a lot of toys, and I love that, but do you have any favorite kinds of toys, like categories, that you just think are important and foster development, and ones that you think inhibit development, toys that maybe just cause kids to go down a certain path and not learn?
Toys that inhibit development, I would say.
And I have a 6 and a 3.5-year-old.
Okay.
But any age.
I have two kids that could care less about TV, and my 2-year-old is obsessed. All he wants to do is sit and stare on the iPad. So I would say, even though I love technology, sometimes that really kind of inhibits play. The only kind of, like, my 2-year-old's play ideas are so much of, like, what he watches on those dang YouTube videos, which is, like, I don't even know what it's just not, it's whatever. So that I would say maybe inhibit.
But to promote, like, I know that for Lincoln, I told you my middle son, he loves everything with tools. And so, like, a workbench. The one thing I think that almost globally, like, from, like, a toddler all the way through, like, a six-year-old is, like, a kitchen of some kind. Like, I think that there's so many play ideas you can do around a kitchen. I just, like, love a kitchen. So, you know, with, like, little things in it. And you could practice making the food, which is all of that sequencing skills, which is good. You could be, like, a grocery store where you practice buying things. There's, like, a lot of play sequences around a kitchen. Otherwise, I would say, like, certain things that your kids are drawn to would be, like, bigger things. Like, some kids love outdoor and gross motor play, so that they would be a great candidate for, like, a scooter or a bike. And then when you're outside, you can do something like set up a road with stop signs. So it's, I don't think that toys are bad by any means. I just think that, like, using the toys to help promote the development is going to help. And some of that is going to be a little bit specific to your kids. But the one thing I do think is kitchen, for sure. I feel like kitchens across all ages really promotes cooperative play and all that.
Hi, I have two questions. First, I have a daughter. She just turned 4 years old, and she's very stubborn and combative with me. And so when I'm asking her to do something, she basically just says, nope. Nope, not gonna do it. And I ask her again, and nope. And then she gives me an ultimatum and says, you know, once you do this, then I'll do what you want me to do. And she's just turned 4. So it'll be good when she's older, for sure, but not now. So I just don't know how to deal with it, because, of course, my frustration level is getting up here. And I'd love something fun and interactive that I can turn that into that'll help me get her to do what I want her to do without getting into this back and forth, like, argument.
Yeah.
Is there anything?
Yeah, so one thing that I try to do with, like, all problem behaviors, like, in my home and at work and stuff, is give your child, like, the language that they're trying to say, but they have no idea how to express it, and they don't even necessarily know what they're feeling. So, like, for your daughter right now, I feel like in this moment, she's trying to say, like, I want to be the boss. Mm-hmm. And that's really what she's trying to express, and she's doing it by kind of, like, mimicking the things that she hears from you, because she's like, I want to be in charge of that. And so I would give her the words, for one. I would say, like, I can hear that you really want to be the mommy. It sounds like you want to be their mommy right now, and you want to be the one to make choices. So for the next 3 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever, you get to be the mommy, and you get to boss me around. You can tell me whatever you want to do, and I will do everything that you want me to do, and you are the mommy. But after that, in real life, I am your mommy, so it's important that you listen to me. And I would just give her the words. Like, that's what she's telling you. She's telling you she wants to be the boss. And you're right. It's going to take her someplace super far in life someday, but she also needs to know... She also needs to know that, like, there's authority, and she needs to respect that, too. So let her play out those play sequences and just put a parameter on it. So I would really try to do that and see if that helps at all.
And have her pay the bills, too. That'd be great.
Yeah, tell her that. I have told my kids that before. I'm like, if you want to be a mommy, then that means you need to cook dinner, and you need to go do that laundry, and you need to whatever. And they're like, oh, okay, well, later.
Sorry, and my second question is easier, probably. So she tends to hide toys, like, all over the house. Whatever she's playing with, if she doesn't want her brother to get to it, she hides them. I mean, I have toys hidden in crevices I didn't even know existed. But she's hiding his toys. She's hiding her toys. She's stuffing drawers like a hoarder. She's stuffing drawers with toys that she won't even touch because she doesn't want anyone seeing her play with them, because she doesn't want them to be taken away.
Yeah, do you have any times of day that he's not around that's just her? Is there, like, a nap time, or, like, I would maybe just even say, like, if there's, like, you know, 15 or 20 minutes that somebody else takes, his the son, you have a younger son?
Yeah, he's yeah. 2.5.
Yeah, so. If he can be out of the house for a little bit, and then you say, okay, guess what, time for hide and seek, go find all the toys you hid around the house and let's play with them. And try to, like, get them out of all those nooks and crannies and then play with them and then be like, oh, my gosh, I'm so glad that these toys weren't hidden. They were so fun to play with. And just see if that kind of helps a little bit to get them out. I'm guessing she wants to, like, not have her brother play with them. But the other thing I would say on that is a flip side. If she's trying not to have her brother play with him, then anytime she does give him an opportunity to share, again, really go back to, like, I love how you're sharing your toys. Look at how happy you're making your brother. There's some things that are special that we put up high, but when we share our toys with our brothers, it's really great, too. So something like that might help.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're
Leslie.
Welcome.
She'll be in the back if you guys have further questions.